Hannah, tell me about your floaters. Do they float or do they sink? Like, the public wants to know.
This is not fair. I did not agree to come on air and have my words be framed in this way. The floaters Maya is referring to are the ones in my eyes, as in like the little dark specks and spots that move around when you look out your eyes. She's never had one before, which is insane to me. I'm so jealous. I wish I could see the world through your eyes, because apparently they like mostly affect people over 50, but my vision is like completely disrupted by the presence of these little dots. And I was saying to Maya that I'm scared I've had a retinal tear, because I have had a bunch of them sort of emerge in the last few days. And so for context, I am recording this with sunglasses on. And these particular sunglasses are like weird prescription sunglasses that I bought when I was hungover and took an eye exam. You should not get your eyes tested when you're hungover, because glasses stores are sort of like the whatever circle of hell, and you will just kind of make crazy decisions to get out of there. And these ones make me look a little bit like a little MAGA.
I had a bad sleep. First thing that I opened my eyes to is a WhatsApp call from Hannah. I open the video chat, and Hannah is just like staring stoically into space with these like aviators on. Her hair looks like it's like kind of wet right now, so it's been a little like crunched, and she's just kind of staring off into space. She kind of looks like Kate Hudson.
I'll take that, but over MAGA.
It was a very confusing vibe, and then she immediately launched into like how she's experiencing floaters, which like we lived together for so many years, and Hannah would take me through all of her like various weekly ailments, but like floaters never once came up. I've also never heard of them for some reason. I feel like I'm living in like a dream for the past few days, and this is really adding to that. Like, it's like a never-ending dream nightmare scenario.
Well, I'm so happy to be the cherry on top of your nightmare week. Me and my floaters.
Your floaters. No, I'm sorry you're experiencing that. That is a lot. Although you do look cool with your aviators. I wouldn't say MAGA necessarily.
The sunglasses aren't even actually making the floaters go away, but the floaters themselves have strained my eyes to the point where I don't like looking at a screen. So I don't know. That's kind of you. I feel like I should own a truck. And I kind of feel like I should be like, you don't tell me whether or not I can vaccinate my kids. I look like there are only two genders. United States.
Pretty good. Hannah this morning has schooled me on the concept of floaters. She's also schooled me on the concept of aura farming, which I thought I knew about this, and turns out I knew nothing.
The definition of aura farming I'm working off of might be inaccurate. Obviously, I've like heard the expression being used, but also resigned myself to the fact that I'm too old for some things. And, you know, there's just a limit to how many new expressions you can learn at once at my age.
The floater age.
Yeah. Clearly, I'm like aging rapidly. So, yeah, there's a cap. My friend Jacob, shout out to Jacob, was like, what do you think of aura farming? And I thought that aura farming was just like things that you, I thought it was similar to the performative male thing where you're like, I'm reading in public. That's a version of aura farming.
That's what I thought it was.
No, apparently it's like cool gestures or something. It's like doing something over and over again. So it's,
is this making us sound chopped and unk?
Look, we have to accept the chopped and unk allegations, okay? We're nearing 30.
Bro, I was in an Uber yesterday, and the Uber driver's older than I am, like, by a long shot. And I said, he was like, what are you, like, he was kind of half hitting on me, but he was like, what are you, like, 21 or something? And I was like, no, sir, I'm 29. And he was like, oh my good God, Jesus Christ. Like, he was like, what the hell? And then he was like, you look very good. And then under his breath, he was like, very good, very, very good. For, like, probably like a minute. I was like, all right, King, drop me off here.
How many stars did you give him?
I haven't looked yet because I'm bad.
Yeah, it's like a weird mix of flattering and like frustration when I tell people my age, and they're like, what? But I just don't think that people know what 28-year-olds look like. Like, I'm going to look like I'm not a full grown-up until I look old, and then it's very clear I'm a grown-up. But like, I don't have a womanly frame or
what
features.
What?
Just like as an adult, like I don't look like a grown up. I'm short. I'm like quite petite, and I have like my
women
features.
Women have historically been small. You know what a Veronica Lake was? She was like 4'9" or something.
That's true. I just mean I don't think people know what 28-year-olds look like, because 28-year-olds have always played like 20-year-olds on television.
You know who we can blame? That chick from Beverly Hills 90210, the nerdy one who was like 30 the entire show.
Well, I remember being a kid and finding out that Stacey Dash was like 27 in Clueless, and I was like, this ancient woman is playing a high schooler.
And like, listen, I actually really don't care when older people play high schoolers, because like, you can't get a high schooler to do some of the stuff they're asked to do.
Yeah, well, also, like, Stacey Dash looked the same age as everyone else.
But then that one lady Clueless. From Beverly Hills 90210 looked unforgivably old. Like, I was like, you look 35. How old was she when, you know, what's her name?
Andrea Zuckerman or something?
So 1 second, let me figure out how old this lady was. Because the rest of them were, like, still, they were quite young. Like, I think that they were in their very early 20s. Gabrielle Carteris was, oh, she looks really nice today. She was 30.
Well, how old was Stockard Channing in Grease? Like, a million years old. Oh, my
God. Ancient. But I give her a little more credit because she was from the Broadway production. You know what I mean? Like, and Stockard, let's not even scapegoat Stockard Channing, because that fucking guy who played Kinnicky was like 50, I swear.
Well, also, maybe it was Olivia Newton-John was quite old too, wasn't she? She was like 30 or something.
Okay, what? Grease is 1975?
Am I wrong? I feel like Olivia Newton-John was old.
God, I gotta rewatch Grease soon. Perfect movie. Okay, 78. Okay, so Stockard Channing was 34. Or wait, no. Yeah. Oh my God, R.A.P. Olivia Newton-John. I did not need to be reminded that she passed away.
Oh, I forgot too.
Olivia Newton-John was 30, exactly. Hmm. And then, okay, Kinnicky.
There's still time for us to play Sandy in Grease.
Oh, R.A.P. Kinnicky. I forgot when he passed away. Kinnicky was younger than both of them.
Well, they hadn't discovered SPF yet. And like, you know how men are. They're always, yeah, like, in the sun.
He looked old as hell, no offense. Yeah. God bless Jeff Conway. Anyways, so...
So
you're not old, is what I'm trying to say. And even though you have floaters and even though you don't know what aura farming is, I'm dubious about this explanation of aura farming. I need it explained to me in a different way.
Okay, so the Google AI, when I looked up aura farming, I don't use AI, it's just what came up. Google AI says... key aspects of aura farming. So, and then it goes, okay, the goal to look effortlessly cool, confident, or skillful to boost personal reputation. The origin, popularized by Gen Alpha and Gen Z, often associated with the viral dance by an Indonesian boy on a boat. Examples, striking a cool pose, hitting a personal best at the gym, or showcasing quiet confidence. And then the risk is trying too hard or being overly dramatic that can make the act cringe, which results in a loss of aura rather than a gain. I still don't understand
anything popularized by Gen Alpha does not need to enter my purview. Like,
That's what I'm saying. Let's just accept the chopped and unked allegations.
I'm also like, that generation's cooked. I'd rather be chopped and unked than be Gen Alpha. So I'm fine.
We are Stockard Channing. That's okay.
There are worse things I could do. Okay, we can all start singing together again.
I know.
All right. I'm Aya.
And I'm Hannah.
And this is Rehash. I just sat up properly. And this is Rehash, a podcast about the social media phenomena that strike a nerve in our culture, only to be quickly forgotten, but we think are due for a revisiting. This season is part two of a loose, no pun intended, history of sex on the internet, the symbiosis of our two most basic instincts, innovation and getting off. If you like our show and you want to hear more from us, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/rehashpodcast. where we have bonus episodes and early access to our regular programming. If you don't want to join the Patreon, feel free to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, because that helps us out a lot. Today, we discuss a website I'm sure like 60% of our female audience has visited at some point in their adult lives when they were down bad. Seeking Arrangements. For the uninformed, Seeking Arrangements is a website that kind of functions like a dating service for sugar babying. You're young, maybe you're down bad, and you go on seeking arrangements and find someone older and richer than you to basically bankroll you in exchange for certain favors, some sexual and some not. Hannah, have you ever perused the site at any point in your life?
Yeah, I think like every, I mean, young woman at some point is like, you know, when you're in your early 20s, I think especially you are very much aware of like the capital you have as a young woman who is an adult, but has all the currencies of like youth and none of the crow's feet of late youth, like I'm currently have. And yeah, of course, you're like, well, what if I were the type of person that had the savviness and the business acumen to take advantage of that in a way that benefited me? I unfortunately lack the business acumen to have really gone anywhere with it, and was living at home with my parents and was like, I can't have a sugar daddy. I literally, like, my mom cooked me dinner last night, you know?
I mean, that could be even the perfect time to have a sugar daddy. Then you're just saving.
If I were more economically resourceful, perhaps I would have pulled it off.
Yeah, same. There's definitely a time in like 2016 or 2017 when I had legitimately $2 to my name and was away at school, where basically like I made an account on Seeking Arrangements and like fully chatted with a couple people on there before checking out. This was like kind of in my, well, one, I like couldn't afford anything, but this was also in my like female kind of hype beast era where I was always on like heroin, which is like, it used to be the girl version of Grailed. I think now they've been one subsumed the other. We're not talking about the drug, but yeah, I would also be on like heroin or Essence looking for nonsense, and I was like, damn, it'd be really nice to actually be able to afford this stuff. You know, obviously, let alone fucking groceries.
That would have been such an insane kind of lore drop if you were like revealing now this far into the podcast that you were a former heroin user.
Yeah, it would be kind of a cool stealth reveal. Like, I kept it from you all these years as well.
I'm like finding out here along with the rehash listeners that my best friend of so many years had like a little junky phase.
Oh, heroin. I thought you thought it'd be cool that I stealth revealed that I did sugar babying. Yeah, it would be crazy that I was keeping that from you. What would be crazier if I was keeping sugar babying from you? Because I feel like that would have been like, why?
Both of them would have made me think you were like a little bit cooler.
If I did a heroin.
Now you're just, the same plain old Maya. Boring.
You're like, damn, I wish she did heroin. Hannah's on her crazy bullshit today.
It's the glasses.
About to be on my video essay bullshit, but basically, these dynamics are old as time. The etymology of sugar babying or daddying as terms is hard to trace, but I thought it'd be fun to include. So one of the earliest was apparently in 1908 when a man named Adolf Spreckels, who was the heir to the Spreckels sugar fortune, married a much younger woman. And it's been recounted from people who knew them that she called Adolf her sugar daddy. And then over the next couple decades, it would evolve into a slang term for a man who exchanges money or gifts for intimacy with a woman. There was also a candy bar from the James Welch Company that was kind of trying to hop on the trend of the word that was called the sugar daddy. And like, obviously, these relationships predated the naming of this. They would continue afterwards. But when the practice became really systematized and out in the open was in 2006, when a guy named Brandon Wade, who the lingo of our times would probably describe as a chud, simply had enough with getting no game. A lot of the literature I was reading for this episode was actually written by Brandon himself. Like, he's doing a fuck ton of self-promotion. So I really got a sense of, like, who this guy is. He actually wrote an entire book about seeking arrangements, which operates as, like, a half history of the site, half instructional guide on how to get mad ladies. In the book, he describes himself during his school years as, quote, an intellectual and, quote, a quintessential nerd, but painstakingly shy around girls. He talks about how he didn't get a girlfriend till he was like 19, which, like, no offense, but try going to an arts high school where 70% of the population is women and 50% of the men are gay, honey. Like, others are struggling as well. Okay, it's not just you.
Speak for yourself.
Fuck you. But it's a pretty usual suspects case. Like, he goes to MIT, he worships Hugh Hefner, who he refers to as Hef throughout the book. He definitely, I would say, belongs to that Big Bang Theory class of like nerd misogyny. Bring it back, we miss it. I kind of wonder where this guy would fit into the manosphere today, actually. Who do you think he'd be in this internet context?
I do, like, I mean, even if you think about like the Big Bang Theory type of archetype, like, actually, I'm fairly certain, at least, okay, just thinking about the Big Bang Theory, those guys all would have ended up on incel forums because the way they talked about women was fucking insane. This guy, yeah, I think he'd be in the manosphere probably. I think it wouldn't be looks maxing, right? It would, what's the wealth version of looks maxing?
Status maxing.
Status maxing, yeah. He'd probably be in the world of status maxing, right?
Yeah, he is kind of a status maxer. I'd also say with the like instructions in this book, he's also a little bit pickup artisty. But no, I think you're right about status maxing. That's exactly what it is. And we will get into that because he is kind of like originating it almost. I don't know. Once again, I continue to wonder if we're in the like techno-feudalist oligarch hellscape we're in now because a few guys need a revenge for not getting laid in high school. Like, I just can't help but think that like we're in this situation just because of a few geeks.
Yeah. People who are like getting to second base are a little too busy to be kind of fantasizing about creating artificial intelligence, etc. Like, when you're a horny teenager, that's a very distracting thing. You don't really like have the time to actually occupy yourself to some greater like scientific or cultural goal, I suppose. But you know what? Now I'm sounding like one of them. I'm like, oh, these teenage girls should have been, you know, hooking up with these guys to save our planet from its pending fate. So
I can't tell if we made geek culture. We like legitimized it too much through like the kind of Marvel era, Big Bang Theory, like all this stuff. If we legitimized it too much to the point that like we've given the virgins too much power and we should go back to making fun of virgins, or we need to like figure out how to get these virgins laid earlier. That sounds so fucked up. I don't know. I don't know what the solution is at this point for the virgins, but it's something.
I think the problem with virgins is that like they all think that they're going to be Zuck, right? They all think they're going to be the one to take that energy and like change the course of history with it. But like majority of virgins are going to end up in a goon cave. Not actually majority of virgins, but I just mean like most of these people are actually just going to live like incredibly unsatisfying lives, not influence anything or anyone and remain virgins, but still have that pent up anger.
Not the Brandon Wades of the world.
No, that's what I'm saying. Some of them are Brandon Wades. Some of them go on to do, I don't want to say great things, but like things.
Okay, well, listen up, virgins, because like this is how you can do it. So he gets an MBA and I don't know why I wrote it like this. Shoots up the management consultant to senior executive to entrepreneur pipeline. I do not mean that he shot this pipeline.
Yeah, it
I
really does sound.
I mean that he like ascended through it. All the while continuing to struggle at getting pussy. So he uses his tech and business skills to develop seeking arrangements. How it works is that aspiring sugar daddies or mommies, but those are much fewer, sign up for a paid subscription. At the moment, there's a 30-day platinum membership, which is $150, a 60-day for $380, and then a 30-day diamond membership, which is $375. With Diamond, your profile gets boosted to the top of the site in like classic dating app fashion. You have to actually upgrade to these in order to be able to message people. Sugar babies, on the other hand, typically sign up for free. When I was reading about this, I kept thinking about this video I saw recently of some tweaked out guy who's talking about how like clubs are for women and rich men, and if you're a broke guy, you have no place there.
So this guy clearly doesn't love to dance.
Well, clubs aren't about dancing. And so I don't know. There's something so interesting about these like hyper hetero spaces to me. Like there's such a theater to it, I guess. I don't know. I guess it's not dissimilar from one of those like 18th or 19th century balls. But like, don't you think there's just something so interesting about the stratification of these types of like, you know, ladies getting free type spaces, feels akin to seeking arrangements. But like, what is going on with the straights?
I mean, I think it's just the transactional nature of heterosexual courtship. Like, even outside of when you're actually spelling it out and someone's, you know, funding the company of another person, we've all been on dates, we've all had men pay for drinks for us or buy us dinner or gone out to a nightclub and a guy that you actually don't even want to talk to offers to buy you a drink and you're like, hey, why not? I was out for my friend's bachelorette and I just knew from the vibe of the place and the vibe of the guy, I just looked over at the man by me at the bar and he bought her a round of drinks and it was like, great, thank you. Didn't speak to him again. He didn't even try and speak to me. This is just sometimes what happens in these spaces. I think it's where men get to feel the power of their financial success if they have it, or get to pretend like they do. And women get to kind of feel the power of, you know, being a woman.
But where are the broke men supposed to dance?
Well, this is the other thing, though, is like, that just makes me really sad, because I think some of the most fun I've had at nightclubs is when I was in a relationship, when I was sober, when I was literally just there to dance with my friends, and it doesn't really matter who's around me. And I find that the men that are there actually, I know I just told an anecdote where I let this man buy me a drink, but like, generally speaking, the men who kind of try and intrude on your time ruin the vibe. Like, they become this thing that you're all kind of joking about, and like, maybe you'll entertain them for 5 seconds, but like, the guys that are there to prowl are like not someone you want to aspire to be. It's way better to be a broke man listening to the music than a guy with money in his pocket, like, looking for someone to, I don't know, spend it on.
Yeah.
But also, I don't think that I'm the right representative of nightclubbing experience, because I have not been to a proper nightclub in like a while.
Well, we did go out for Hannah's birthday like a few years ago, and she kind of looked like a baby that night, and the men were just flocking to her. Remember, like, you just looked really young. You had your little tiara on, and all the men, we convinced them that you were turning 21 or something insane.
No, it was, I was wearing a birthday girl ribbon. It was my 25th. And then I told this guy at the club that it was my 19th birthday, and he looked so scared because he was like 26.
I remember this as the opposite. They were like excited by that. Okay, so the boys were all right, basically.
Yeah, I know. It was a good vibe check. He was not interested when he found out that I was fake 19.
You kind of like, imagine you were into him and you just like fully blew your chances. Like, yeah. All right. Well, okay. So by 2007, Seeking Arrangements has 100,000 members and got a ton of notoriety in mainstream media. It's only grown since and spawned sister sites like Seeking Millionaire, which is a millionaire dating website, and whatsyourprice.com, which allows men to bid for a date. Miss Travel, which is their dating website, where at that point I'm just like, Tinder will suffice, babe. I don't know why you're on that. And then Carrot Dating, where men will bribe women for dates. There's also openminded.com, which promotes so-called ethical cheating, all run under Wade's purview. Hannah, you would love openminded.com.
Yes, no, me and my pro-cheating stance. Don't worry, it's a platform I'm going to run on in 2028 or something.
Wade is kind of an interesting case because he talks about the dating world as being a place where men are disproportionately represented and peddles manosphere ideas about hypergamy, which we'll get into a bit later. But he's also oddly sympathetic to women at the same time. He'll be like, in a world where women earn 70 cents to every dollar earned by a man, I've seen countless women struggle to put themselves through school, set up professional careers, raise children alone, or just survive from one day to the next. Like everyone else, I was familiar with their laundry list of complaints against men. And I do think this informs a pretty complicated undercurrent running below Seeking Arrangements. Like, he's defensive of sugar babying as something of a logical outgrowth of feminism, that when women have more financial freedom, they're able to choose their own lifestyles and the relationships they want. And he goes, At seekingarrangement.com, we say it's a logical lifestyle for an independent-minded 21st century individual. Seeking Arrangement is touted as being an alternative dating site, like similar to something like Field, for example.
Field is interesting because I think Field in Toronto was like a really specific site that I think people would be on, I guess, if they were looking for something specific, whereas I think it's more normalized and like used a bit more like a dating, like a normal dating app here, I guess, or like hookup app.
It's kind of become that everywhere at this point. Make Field weird again, 2026. Like, where are all the kinksters, you know? Where are all the boys with their dens of iniquity?
It's one of these things where you'll see someone from Hinge, someone who has a really normal Hinge profile, and then they're on Field, and then they're like listing all of their like preferences, and then sometimes they'll have like an initial as their name instead of their name, and it's like, babe, I know your name because I've seen you.
I literally know your name.
Yeah, well, and it's similar to Field in the way that the relationships it fosters are non-traditional, and like that's how it touts itself, which obviously, yeah, Field has changed over time, but it is about this kind of like alternative style dating. Wade says that Seeking Arrangements ethos is about learning to live the way you want to live rather than what has been socially ascribed to you. And there's something almost like admirable here in this pragmatism about gender disparities and like the way it produces an inherently transactional paradigm of sexual relationships. I was also kind of taken with his admiration for women's sexual power, like, and his encouragement of that power as being its own valuable currency. Like, I was a little bit like, oh, that's kind of, you know, he does kind of like worship women in this way. But of course, like, this kind of thinking can quickly topple over into more harmful ideas, as we will see. Yeah. What we need to know for now is that Wade rails against the stigma of sugar babying as a gold-digging activity, and he says that at Seeking Arrangements, they are, quote, talking about strong, successful men and women who know what they want and set out to get it. Their happiness doesn't come at the expense of someone else, but rather in sync with another person. So it's essentially with this site, sugar babying is framed as like an empowering activity, like a business relationship between clear-headed individuals. Obviously, for legal reasons, Seeking Arrangements has vehemently distanced itself from the idea of sex work. Their terms of service strictly prohibit exchanging sex for money. They also screen babies by doing backup image searches. So if their photo is found on like Backpage or like escort site, you can be denied entry. Chats are also heavily monitored. But Hannah, would you consider sugaring? I need to say sugar babying because sugaring is just like when you rip the hair out of your, you know,
yeah,
armpits or whatever. But would you consider sugar babying a form of sex work?
I think it enters into this weird gray area because, like we said, I mean, a lot of heterosexual dating is transactional, even if it's not said outright. I think especially casual dating, not all of it. I mean, like, girlies are definitely dating guys who are asking to, like, split the bill at the pub with them, broke-ass mans, and they're doing fine for themselves. Like, don't get me wrong. But I do think that a lot of the dating market is quite transactional, or at least, like, the traditional approach that we have. And so when you're especially in, like, a stage where you're, like, not sharing a life with someone and you're just going on dates and one person is routinely paying for it, and you're, like, continuing a relationship with someone, that's not sugar babying in the sense that, like, no one's sending you money, perhaps, to, like, go shopping, but someone is still, like, treating you. Like, I've gone to dinner at places where I probably wouldn't have spent that much money if I was paying for the dinner. Okay, for reference, I am currently researching Bonnie Blue, and I just tortured myself by listening to her and Andrew Tate on a podcast together. Oh my God. And Andrew Tate, like, his argument is that basically every woman is a sex worker because women are spending men's money and men are paying for stuff for women and living off of, like, that money. And when I think about, like, sugar babying as a form of sex work, it makes me worried about, like, stepping into that territory, right? Of, like, then seeing, like, I don't know, it's hard because, like, obviously there are explicit intentions said, whereas, like, with the Andrew Tate stuff, it's like he's just framing every single woman in a relationship with a man as a sex worker. But it's complicated. And also, like, of course, that's not even to stigmatize sex work itself. It's just that I think it really does exist in a gray area. I don't necessarily think that it's as clear cut, but maybe a sugar baby would disagree. I don't know.
I think you're striking the nail on the head with, like, the inherent transactional nature too, like, historic transactional nature to heterosexual dating, which isn't necessarily the case for all heterosexual partnerships, but, like, it has been the historic purpose of it almost. Yeah, the site very much targets college-aged women, and all of its spokespeople, including Wade, focus on the idea of, like, paying off college debt as a major driving factor for joining. You even actually get special perks if you sign up with a .edu email address.
Lately, I've been more intentional about what I wear day to day, leaning into pieces that feel effortless, comfortable, and still put together. It just makes getting dressed simpler, and Quince has been my go-to. The fabrics feel elevated, the fits are flattering, and everything just works without overthinking it. I want to plan an entire vacation around Quince's gorgeous selection of 100% European linen pieces. With classic silhouettes in such a breathable fabric, they're the epitome of comfy chic. And Maya is looking at a summer kitchen refresh, so naturally, she's got her eye on a set of handcrafted wooden bowls from Quince. They're eco-friendly, made domestically, and somehow reasonably priced. Refresh your everyday with luxury you'll actually use. Head to quince.com/rehash for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada too. That's quince.com/rehash for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/rehash. Your home is more than just furniture. It's an extension of who you are. Even small details like a rug can completely change how a space feels. That's why I love Ruggable. With so many styles to choose from, you're sure to find the right fit for you. I have one of their farmhouse style rugs in my living room, and it's completely transformed the space. The pattern is inspired by traditional quilts, and it gives the room the cozy, crafted feel I've been wanting. Plus, it's made for real life. It's stain-resistant, machine-washable, and pet-friendly, which is a game-changer as someone living with flatmates and a cat. Refresh your home at Ruggable.com. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with promo code REHASH at Ruggable.com. That's Ruggable.com, and use the code REHASH at checkout.
Nice. So in this current moment, you don't have to be like a condemned or like fallen woman to become a sex worker, right? People from all sorts of economic backgrounds are struggling to make rent, or in the US especially, pay off ridiculous amounts of student debt. And I think being driven to enter into like non-romantic transactional relationships with men in order to live more freely does kind of position babying as something done out of necessity, which has been the case for sex work historically. Yes, there are like tons of cases where sex isn't on the table, like that is pretty common with sugar babying. Like, I know people who have had sugar daddies who they like don't sleep with at all. But there is an element of intimacy involved in a man wanting even just like company from a woman and paying for it. On the other side of things, many of these men who are daddying report that their jobs are also so demanding as to not have enough time in their day-to-day lives to keep up a romantic relationship. So they turn to something in which they have control over the level of time spent together and like the level of intimacy. They like to control what the babies wear. Like the accounts I was reading were talking about how the men would ask them to come with like blowouts and like high heels and whatever, falsies. But yeah, they can control that. In one article I read, this one daddy says, "I can't separate the fact that I have resources from who I am. It's a part of me, and it's something I have to offer 20-somethings. In another, a baby is like, "You know, it's really funny to me when people say that I'm selling my body. Of all the work I've done, this isn't abusive to my body. Most of my clients are computer industry workers, about half. Sometimes I ask myself, what about their bodies? These men spend 40 hours a week hunched over a desk. They live alone, eat alone, drive to work alone. Other than seeing me, they don't seem to have time for a social life." And I thought this was really interesting because you're seeing how kind of like a neoliberal economy with zero safety nets, where work is life, like really does affect us all from all ends of the spectrum. And like, it just kind of made me wonder whether this is so different from like creating GoFundMes for healthcare costs. Do you know what I mean? Do you see the parallels there?
Well, yeah, I think, I mean, people have been trying to like ascend their class through romantic relationships for time. Like, that's not like a new thing at all. But then also like, yeah, I can see, I mean, there's something interesting. It's like a gig economy thing where it's like, mm-hmm. I can't do the commitment of owning a car. Mm-hmm. So I take Ubers, and it's like, I can't have the commitment of a relationship. So I'm going to like engage in this sort of strange relationship where someone feels like a certain level of loyalty to me because of the like money that's on the table. But that can be done then on like my terms and doesn't require emotional commitment per se. But there is like some investment there. So it's, I don't know, it's like gig economy sex work, I guess.
Yeah, that's 5 trillion% what's going on. It's kind of like a hyper individualized like band-aid solution to kind of more systemic class problems. Like, okay, ladies, since you're going to struggle to pay rent because of this economic system, why don't you just go get this random man to pay for you? You know, like, hey, guys, can you cover my medical bills because I had this accident and I can't afford healthcare because the system sucks. So I need to turn to like these individuals to help me.
I guess the main difference being like when you do those GoFundMes, right, you're kind of relying on the pure generosity of other people. But with something like sugar babying, someone else is getting something else out of it on the other end.
Yeah, like it's an exchange.
You know, you're Yeah, you're like giving what you have to offer, I suppose. It's like, well, I can't offer money, but I have something else that's valuable, which my company.
Yeah, my body. And that's what kind of teeters into sex work. There's this book by Elizabeth Bernstein called Temporarily Yours, Intimacy, Authenticity, and the Commerce of Sex, where she talks about how there was always an assumption that the more women entered the workforce and gained financial independence, the less reason we would have for sex work to exist. But posits that actually, as time has gone on, the opposite has happened, where people from, quote, the new middle class and the creative classes are entering into commercial sexual encounters. I do think of sugar babying personally as a form of sex work that is responding to the neoliberal conditions of like instability, precarity, and loneliness. I think it's just understood as an elevated form of sex work, because sex work doesn't always have to be, because the sex doesn't always have to be on the table, and it's more about like companionship than sexual gratification, a little bit more long term. It also kind of exploded during that whole like sex work as empowerment, like, you know, slut walk era, where sex workers were positioned in the media as like entrepreneurs, and you can see Seeking Arrangements using a lot of that same language on their site. Totally. There's a lot of generalizing happening on the side of Wade and his cronies about dating culture. He talks extensively about the concept of hypergamy, which has been culturally understood as women dating up. Clavicular is always talking about hypergamy because he's convinced that women are uglier than the men they date, which is fucking crazy. But yeah, like the understood is women dating up, so dating men who have like more financial status than they do, or in Clavicular's terms, who are hotter than them. In his book, Wade says that Seeking Arrangements was born out of frustration with conventional dating websites, and that, quote, here, intelligence, success, and wealth count as much or more than superficial qualities such as physical appearance, well-toned pecs, or being up on the last trendy trends. And is like, the ratio of women to men is much greater on Seeking Arrangements than on other websites, and in a smaller pool, I'm a bigger fish. Guys like me stand out as gentlemen. The women on the site value our assets and shower us with attention. Seeking Arrangement is my attempt to level the playing field. What do you think about this, Hannah?
I guess my experience and perspective of dating as a woman is the complete opposite of how these men like to present it. There's this idea that women hold all the power in our hands. And like, you know what? Maybe it differs on the circles you're in, but in our sort of circles, at least, it's like you have a woman who has everything to offer, usually probably like makes more money than the guy she's dating or is going to, dating a man that doesn't check any box at all.
And is like mean.
And is just getting so much gratification from like the smallest gestures. And now I feel like I sound like a femcel or something, but I just mean like, that is not the lived experience I've had. I don't necessarily think that our friends are the types of women they're referring to, and these men are the types of men that our friends would date, right? Yeah. Like, it's a different, like, we're not working in finance. We're not going to, like, nightclubs like these people would be going to. Like, it's a different vibe.
I'm going to the dive bar.
Yeah, it's like, I think dive bar dating and nightclub dating are in vastly different experience. That being said, I still am like, the imaginative, creative thinking a woman will do to kind of convince herself that she's attracted to a guy for whatever reason, like, I just have a hard time believing that we're walking around with these extensive checklists.
Once again, I dated a guy once who Hannah described as looking like he collects rocks. So, like...
Oh, like he collects bugs, which is even worse.
Oh, yeah, it was bugs. No, I wrote a little note in there. I said, Brandon Wade should go to Toronto. I think he would thrive there.
But that's, it's like Adam Friedland talking to Clavicular. It's like, okay, maybe in Florida, like, you gotta look a certain way to pick up women in nightclubs, but like...
Yeah.
You just need a skateboard in some cities to, like, have some of the hottest girls you'll ever meet, like, throwing themselves
at you.
Not
even that, dude. Not even a skateboard. You don't need anything in Toronto. Like,
you can
really
just
don't.
Be next to a guy with a skateboard.
You can be, like, around a guy with a skateboard. Yeah.
Skateboard adjacent.
I know. I also find it interesting how he distinguishes physical qualities as being, like, superficial as opposed to having, like, success and wealth, which are, like, deeper qualities. It does feel like it's sowing the seeds of inceldom. I guess maybe in a way that also benefits women, at least, rather than whatever, like, you know, the black pill guys are doing. But like,
I guess I think that the black pill guys are the guys that just like don't even see that future for themselves. Right. These are the guys that feel like they have like the hope or they have an out. Mm-hmm. But I think ultimately they all still view women and like the way women date the same way, which is that like women are looking for something more, like there's an ulterior motive to whatever it is, and that men, by virtue of being men on their own, like don't stand a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that's the impression you get when you've never met a woman but you've watched 2000s like rom-coms or something.
No, totally. Yeah, and in one puff piece he wrote about himself for CNN.
What? How are you allowed to do that?
You definitely are, but I think it was in promotion for his book, so he was doing kind of like, it potentially was like excerpts from his book that were being spliced into different news channels. So he wrote that little girls grow up believing they're going to find Mr. Right, who is wealthy, successful, and handsome. And then one of Wade's spokespeople said in another interview that women will always find the men with a good job. The difference is that Seeking Arrangement is brutally honest about that. And I don't know, don't you find that so untrue? Like, yes, we grew up with the idea of knights in shining armor, I guess, but like equally prevalent to that were these like romantic notions of choosing the working class guy. Like, I feel like Titanic had such a stranglehold over me, and like, who can forget Shrek, for example?
I would argue that like almost all the media we grew up with presented a narrative where a woman or girl is like lusting after this richer guy, or like this perfect quote-unquote man, the Prince Charming, and then subversion. She realizes it's her goofy guy next to her.
Literally materialist. Like,
well, I mean, also that guy was Chris Evans, so yeah. But Chris, like, Evans. Pretty in Pink, yes, that's a narrative where she picks the hot, rich, popular boy over the goofy little gay sidekick. But like, but that was 30 plus years ago. Things have changed.
Mean popular boy versus goofy twink. Who are you going to pick?
Better or for worse, the goofy twinks are running this world.
I would love to. I will take a goofy twink any day. Like, if you can make me laugh, I'll take you. Like, I'll take you.
Are you kidding me? If Fields had a goofy twink option, I'd be pressing that.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
No, you could be serious, and I know you are. I feel like they're probably saying this because Seeking Arrangements was very much established on the principle that love is dead. Like, at one point, Wade legit says that love is a concept invented by poor people, which did make me laugh. So it's hard to tell if Seeking Arrangements is a pragmatic or pessimistic answer to the dating scene.
I think pragmatism and pessimism can go hand in hand. I think that pragmatism is the answer to a pessimistic outlook.
I'm walking proof.
true. It's the Miranda Hobbes. But I think there is an inherent, very pessimistic, almost sometimes like a nihilistic outlook to love and dating in the modern age. And we are trying to find like solutions that are, yes, pragmatic, but I think primarily profitable. It's like, how can we profit off of this dire situation and then present it as like a smart workaround or like a way of taking it by the reins?
That was kind of what we talked about in our dating apps episode. Like, every single app is attempting to find the gap in the market. And the gap is always just like, people aren't in love enough anymore. We're going to make them fall actually in love. But this one is like, this is like the opposite of Hinge, basically.
Yeah, it's like, love isn't real, give us your money.
Which I kind of, I do appreciate just like the frankness of it, you know, like Hinge is
sure,
doing the same stupid shit.
Sure, but love is real. You heard it here, I'm gonna say it, love is real.
If I get married to a man from Hinge, I need Hinge to, like, do you think they pay for people's weddings? Like, that'd be kind of cool.
I bet they'd like put you on their posters. Well, no, I guess like, I'm sorry, unfortunately, Zohran Mamdani, like that's the best Hinge success story. They're going to be riding off of that forever.
Yeah, no, it's true. Did I ever tell you that I saw an apartment hunting video? I used to be addicted to watching like apartment tour videos. And one of the tour videos was of like the gayest man that's ever existed and his wife. And they had a sex swing in their living room. And everyone in the comments was like, this man is literally the gayest man on earth. And it turned out he was the founder of Hinge.
Whoa.
It's like an old video, and I think it got taken down, but it was on this like really like small channel. He was just like actually so gay.
Is he a goofy twink?
I should watch more interviews with him, but in that video he seemed extremely like not like a goofy twink, like a serious twink. For realsies. Anyways, Hannah, was there any glaring reason that you decided not to follow through with Seeking Arrangements?
Well, yeah, like I said, I was living with my parents, so I couldn't just be like, hey, I'm going out to meet like a 40-year-old man for dinner.
Any other things that would make you nervous about doing something like that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that it takes a level of clear-headedness and like savviness and not compartmentalization, because I don't know. Again, like, I do think this is sort of like a gray area thing, but like, I just think at the age where the thought had crossed my mind, I don't think I really felt like I had the like mature grasp on like sex and love and money and all of that stuff, like really to have been a fruitful sugar baby. I was very sensitive. Let's just say that. I just don't think it would have been for me. But I, you know, we know people who've done it and like they've had positive experiences with it. So
no, it's true. But okay, well, the spokesperson for Seeking Arrangements mentioned that their site removed all the risk of dating and named love as the risk that people were taking, but that the transactional dynamic would eliminate that. But can you think of some other pretty obvious risks he was forgetting there?
Safety?
Precisely, Dahl. There is the obvious safety element. And like,
yeah,
Seeking Arrangements does have an extensive page about it on their site, but also like lots of accounts were coming out over the years that brokies were on the site trying to scam women.
Not brokies.
Brokies.
Get to the skate park.
There was one big New York Times piece in 2018 about a woman who had joined for all the classic reasons we talked about, like moving to New York with student debt, wanting disposable income, who met this guy on the site named Ron. And to summarize a bit for you, Ron says that they should meet in downtown Brooklyn midday, and he gets the girl to book the hotel room for him on the basis that he likes a dynamic where the baby feels like a personal assistant. He tells her to bring a friend, so she gets her friend to join, and tells them exactly how to dress. And then when they're in the room, they ask him to pay the $2,500 that they arranged for this meeting up front, and he says that he'll pay through the PayPal app. And then he like kind of, he's like, oh, request me. And so they like request him, and then he goes on his phone and like taps it a bunch, and he's like, okay, it's done. And then he makes them turn off their phones before they all have sex, and the girls give him a massage. Once that's done and he's gone, they realize that he never actually accepted the PayPal request, and they figure out that he's actually a public servant and a student, and he's married with kids and not the high-flying investment banker that he says he was. Turns out it's a bit like Raya in that, like, over time, a bunch of regular-ass guys were on there looking to score some hotties, and the hotties are getting bamboozled in the process. When the Times asked Wade to comment on the situation, he said that the girl had been engaging in sex for money and so was violating the terms of service. And that's kind of the genius of it all, isn't it? Because what much of sugar babying is exchanging sex and intimacy for money and gifts, but not in, like, third spaces like strip clubs or motels, and usually happening over longer periods of time. So again, like we said, it's a gray area. And so because of this, Seeking Arrangements can constantly eschew any responsibility they have to the girls. Shit. They can take accountability for safety infractions, but the second that money is on the table, it becomes solicitation and thus like not under their domain, even though this is basically the entire purpose of their service.
Right. So the entire purpose of their service, like when Seeking Arrangements was being dreamed up, do you think that like the explicit intention was for escorting, essentially, like that kind of payment where someone's sending someone a specific sum of money for a date? Or was it more like set up to be kind of a transactional type relationship where you go on dates and then maybe someone sends you money to like spoil you, or you know, replicate the kind of relationship that you might be in if you were actually dating a wealthier man?
Well, it could be both, right? And there's a lot of wink wink nudge nudge, especially in the early years, about the sexual undertones of it, right? Like it's sexy, right? And the website had all these like sexy stock photos on it, and it's like, what is sugar babying? Yeah, like, what is the difference between that and escorting? Like, I guess it's the longer term companionship, but like, it's so case by case. Like, every relationship that comes out of Seeking Arrangements is different, but like, a lot of them are determined by gifts and money. And so the second money's there and the second sex is there, you're kind of fucked because it's illegal. So this was, you know, kind of the entire purpose of their service, or at least an extreme suggestion that this was what the service was about. That is, until recently. So I perused the website and I was struck by how different it looked to when like I first used it, for example. It used to be quite a bit like busier and harder to navigate. I don't know if you remember how it looked before, Hannah.
Well, a long time ago. Like, I don't really remember it.
Well, basically now it has a much more like sleek and like visually pleasing interface. The photos are a lot more vague as well, like hot men and women driving in like nice cars or dancing on a night out, or like there'll just be a picture of like a nice hotel villa rather than like, yeah, the old stock looking images of like some blonde sitting on the lap of an old guy that like used to be there. Okay. They've also dropped arrangements from the name and changed their name just to Seeking. I also noticed another huge change on their About Us page. They say in bold letters that Seeking today is distinctly different from its original model. Sugar dating, financial arrangements, and mutually beneficial relationship structures are explicitly prohibited under Seeking community standards. Seeking is now designed exclusively for building genuine and aspirational partnerships. So it's no longer a sugar site, but like instead just a luxury dating site.
So it's trying to be Raya, except it'll never be Raya.
You will never be Raya. Raya's also such a fucking scam.
Oh, yeah. Raya's stupid waste of money. Yeah.
Accounts, they're just kind of disappearing into the ether. And apparently, like, my friend was telling me that when you delete your account, like, it actually still exists. So people will still see it and think you're on there. So, like, a lot of the time you'll be seeing people who actually deleted their accounts, like, months ago.
Every few months I'll be like, fine, I'll spend money on Raya and then I'll download it. And then suddenly I'm, like, matched with people. I'm like, when did this happen?
Yeah, yeah. It'll be, like, the most random-ass guy. And I'm like, I do not remember clicking on you, but okay.
It's fun to, like, the novelty of playing Raya. And just being like, what celebrity is going to show up in this deck of people? And then you're like, I'm obviously not matching with this celebrity. And then you...
And who knows if they're even seeing you, because there's so few swipes a day, even though you're fucking paying for the service. It's crazy.
Yeah, that's why the famous guys aren't matching with me. It's because they haven't seen me yet.
Yeah, that's why Lakeith Stanfield didn't match with me. Yeah. I looked further into this, and it looks like the change happened when Wade got married to his current wife, this lady named Dana, who he met in Ukraine when she was working under him. Haha, that's what she said, or something.
Nice one.
Thank you. Apparently, Dana has played a major hand in reforming the site and says that this is all done in service of eliminating fraud and protecting women's safety and encouraging meaningful hypergamous relationships, which is so funny.
Meaningful hypergamous relationships. I want a t-shirt that says that. Can that be our merch?
Yeah, that'd be kind of fun. There's a lot of like empty corporate speak going on here, but basically Dana says in interviews that Seeking is about hypergamy 2.0, which she says is about, quote, the desire to uplift one another, to give and receive equally, as represented by my relationship with my husband. And so the new Seeking, in her words, is about building authentic connections and, quote, allows for a much more effective approach to dating and relationships with quality versus quantity front of mind. What are your thoughts on this? Like, why the change from being a specialized service? And, like, do you think it'll be effective?
My assumption when you first said that was that it had something to do with Sesta Fosta or Fosta Sesta. I can't remember.
Fosta Sesta.
I thought that it was to do with the fact that like it is really kind of murky waters to be advertising a service that could be interpreted as a place where sex workers arrange to meet Johns, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's kind of layered in all of this other jargon and isn't, you know, if that's the reputation that it has and people are trying to come down on any sort of promotion of sex work on the internet, then it would seem like inevitable that Seeking arrangements would take a hit. Like, I'm kind of surprised that it wouldn't have earlier. But the fact that it wasn't even because of that and it was because of him entering this relationship is
funny? Like, it could be a mixture of all of the above, right? Like, they're not going to come out and say it.
Yeah, I can't imagine that, considering, I mean, go listen to last season on sex if you haven't, but like, considering all of the different like avenues that were affected by these laws, I just have a really hard time believing that Seeking arrangements was able to kind of like keep on keeping on. I imagine that would have played a role for sure. I also do think it's really funny that they're like, well, we found a meaningful relationship, which is a relationship that came from her working beneath him, which to me feels, you know,
no, it's hilarious.
Characteristic of the types of relationships that would thrive in a Seeking arrangements type of world. But let's not blame a woman entirely. I'm sure the government is also labor or something.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot going on here. I think a big reason they did this, yeah, was to officially distance themselves from the negative connotations associated with sugaring. It does make me think that with the unpredictability of these dynamics, it kind of might not be possible for something as corporatized as this to sustain itself.
No.
When this brand of alternative relationship is so like illicit and has so much proximity to sex work and is contingent mm-hmm. upon somewhat like dangerous gender dynamics and power imbalances. I do also feel like this is the same thing as every platform, just kind of like you were even saying with Field, like absorbing the affordances of the others. This is just corporate speak and kind of more to protect the liability of the company than it is to foster like authentic connections, because like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why wouldn't I just go on like Hinge or Raya or the League if I wanted something authentic or like luxury? Like, it just feels very classic, like a brand promising a service and then pulling it out from underneath you.
I also think that luxury itself is sort of like a coded word, because I think that Raya isn't obviously functioning in the same way as Seeking Arrangements, but like Raya, a lot of Raya is men who seem to be financially successful in whatever field they are, and then like women that should be on Love Island because they're like influencer hot.
Women who are hot, yeah.
The amount of people I've mentioned that I've had Raya to, and they're like, how did you get on Raya? And I'm like, okay, I get it. I'm not Raya hot, but like...
No, they definitely mean like, oh, they thought you had to be like a celeb.
No, but also like I think there's a model of like, this isn't even a bash against myself, I think there's a model of the type of woman that like gets on Raya and is like there for the guys who are like, I make enough money. Like, yes, it started off as maybe people in the arts or like people who were successful or like exclusive, but now I think it has sort of spiritually become like an echo of this sort of transactional relationship setup, because
totally.
I think it's like it is a bit of finance bros and baddies, which is good for them. Unfortunately, until Lakeith Stanfield gets back to me, I've yet to really find my place on the app.
Lakeith Stanfield, that's my one who also
rejected me, Maya.
What? Really?
Yes.
Why haven't we discussed this bond?
I'm sure we did.
I was kind of thinking that surely this was a terrible business move, but I was reading on the Sugar Baby subreddit that this hasn't really deterred people from still fostering sugar relationships on there. It's more of like a brand change than anything. But wow, it is just like such a jump from like the nerd machismo of Wade back in 2009, like as opposed to this current iteration of Wade. Like, he was just so, yeah, this is what this is, and like, what's wrong with that? Like, he was so in that destigmatizing era, but like, you can see how Seeking Arrangements has kind of been taken up by the waves of culture.
Yeah, he's status maxed to normiehood or something.
And yeah, no, he's status maxed to being like a low-level normie or whatever the fuck, and now he's fine. Girls, if you are looking for other options, I hear dashflirt.com is a popular alternative, but do not hold me to that, and I don't know that much about the website, so I'm gonna wipe my hands of liability here. I don't know. I read about it on like a subreddit, but that was the alternative that the people were giving. I guess to end off, Wade said in his book back in 2009 that thanks to his website, the next generations would never be able to imagine the terrible sense of isolation he felt as a guy with no game, but lots of smarts and money. He predicted, now every kind of life or lifestyle variation, every permutation, every possible minority, gay, dwarf lovers, people with freckles, you name it, there's an online group of more likely a dozen. And I just thought this was kind of rich.
Wait, were you going to ask me for my input as a person with freckles?
What do you think as a person with freckles? Like,
as a part of that minority?
Yeah, have you joined like some sort of people with freckles sex club on the internet?
That is so... The idea of seeking out someone who also has freckles to me is so deeply unsettling.
Also, he wasn't like dwarves. He said dwarf lovers.
The truly oppressed group.
I don't know. I just kind of thought this was rich and also like insanely depressing, because as we saw in the first two episodes of this season, like the younger generations are experiencing the worst isolation and self-loathing.
Yeah.
Maybe than anyone ever has in this regard. And I don't know. Do you think people like Wade are partly to blame for that?
Well, I do think it reinforces this sort of, again, complicated and not exactly true narrative that men are looking for sex and women are looking for money, right? So, of course, like making a business model off of that entire concept isn't going to help reassure like young people who are coming up and dating that if they're a woman, the only thing they have to offer is their, like, looks or their, like, sexuality. And as a man, the only thing you have to offer is your success and your finances. Like, no, I don't think it's, like, doing any good. I don't think that he invented this concept. And I don't think that, like, it wouldn't have not thrived without his contributions. But having it, like, spelt out there on a literal app probably isn't really getting, like, the best message out there. It's evidence for incels to point to as, like, look at society, look at how it's being spelled out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think what we really need to be asking is, what about the people with freckles? And, like, what about the messages that they've absorbed? And what if you're a broke bitch with freckles? Like, where do you go from there? Thank you.